Hello and welcome to this episode of Folklore, Food and Fairy Tales. If you're new, it's lovely to meet you. If you're back again, it's so nice to have you back again. I hope you'll enjoy this episode. As it is October, I'm going to do something slightly differently over the course of the month. First of all, we'll have this episode, which has a story, a slightly scary story because it's October, and then it also has the standard thing I talk about. Things that are in the story, the food is in the story, some folklore, some history. And then, later on in the month, in fact, the Friday before Halloween, I will be releasing a separate episode which is just scary stories. Some of them have food, some of them don't, but I think you'll really like them. This episode's story is by, well, it's from a book by Ruth Manning Sanders. Spooks and Spectres, and I just love it. I love the whole book, if I'm honest. But we'll talk more about that shortly. This story is called The Dark Spectre, and it comes from South Tyrol. So, if you're listening comfortably, then I'll begin. A merchant had three sons. We don't need to bother about the names of two of them. They don't really appear in the story that much. But the youngest was called Jack. Jack was, wasn't complex. His two brothers looked down on him and thought him a fool, but he was anything but a fool, as you will agree when you hear the story. Well now, Jack's two brothers, they wanted to travel and see the world, and their father was quite willing they should go. So they set out, each with a big purse of money in his pocket and a fine horse to ride. Well, you see, the problem was they set out, but they didn't come back. And that worried Jack. Father, he said, where are my brothers? Oh, they're just enjoying themselves in some place or other, I suppose, said his father. Then what about me, said Jack. Why shouldn't I be enjoying myself in some place or other? Because I think you're better off at home, said his father. But I want to see something of the world, said Jack. And he said this so often that at last his father answered, oh, very well. Then he gave Jack a good little horse and a purse full of money, and Jack set out. Away he rode and on he rode. He saw towns and villages and people working in fields and people trudging along the roads and people going to market. But he saw nothing very different from anything he might have seen at home. If this is the world, said Jack to himself, I don't think much of it. But one early evening when he was on the lookout for somewhere to spend the night, he came to a roadside tavern. On the opposite side of the road was just a black little hill, and near the top of this little hill was a castle. You couldn't call it a ruin exactly, because its walls were stood up stout and strong, but it had that look, the empty look, as though no one had lived in it for a very long time. Jack looked at the castle, and then he went to the tavern. Hello, landlord, said, give me some supper and a bed for the night, and if you've got a good stable and some food for my little horse. The landlord said he could, and he had, so Jack jumped off the horse and went with the landlord to the stable. When the landlord opened the stable door, Jack got a huge surprise. What did he see? Each in a stall and munching oats, but his brother's two horses. Landlord, where did you get those two horses? I didn't buy them, and I don't mean to sell them, because they don't belong to me. They belong to two young gentlemen. And I wish they'd come back and fetch them, because these horses are eating me out of house and home. But I fear that they never will. Where are those two gentlemen, landlord? Well, sir, they went up to the castle, and they didn't come back. It's a sad case, sir. No one who goes up to the castle ever does come back. I must look into this, thought Jack, and he didn't even wait to have his supper. He stayed long enough to see his little horse fed, watered, and bedded down, then off with him up to the castle, with the landlord standing at the door of the tavern, shouting after him, don't go! But Jack would go. He climbed up a little hill, came to the castle, found the great entrance door unlocked, pushed it open, and went in. The castle was finely furnished. All the rooms were in spick and span order. But he didn't find his brothers there. In fact, he didn't find anybody. And though he shouted himself hoarse, he got no answer. So he went out again, and he stood looking out over one of the rampart walls, wondering what he should do next. On the wall was an elder bush covered with ripe berries. Those berries would make a nice pudding, thought Jack, and picked a hatful. Now, it was growing dark, so he went back into the castle. He was still thinking of his brothers, and he didn't mean to leave the place until he got some news of them, or at least could assure himself they'd been there and gone. So, wandering from room to room, he came into the castle kitchen, where there was a big stack of firewood, piled wood onto the hearth, lit the fire, looked around the kitchen cupboards, which were still very well stocked, and found flour and sugar, all in good condition, and set about making an elderberry pudding. He was so proud of himself when he had that pudding tied up in a cloth, hanging in a crock of boiling water over the fire. He was licking his lips and thinking what a good meal he would have, when the kitchen door creaked open, and someone, or something, came in. That someone was a dark spectre, and the dark spectre was scowling. "Ah," said Jack, "good evening. I'm glad you've come, because truth to tell, I was beginning to feel quite lonely. Now, you shall share my pudding, but you must wait a while, because it isn't cooked yet."
"I will not wait," snarled the dark spectre. "You must come with me at once."
"Oh, no," said Jack. "I can't go with you anywhere just now, because you see, my pudding might burn."
"If you don't come at once," snarled the dark spectre, "I will tear you up."
"What?" said Jack. "You threatened to tear me up. That settles it. I'm not going a single step anywhere with you." The dark spectre changed his tune then. He began to whimper. "I want you to come. I do want you to come. And the pudding won't be burned. I give you my word. Please come, please come, please come." And now there was actually a tear trickling down the spectre's dark cheek. Jack didn't like to see that tear. So he said, "Oh, very well, I'll come. But understand, old fellow, if my pudding does burn, I'll never forgive you." "It will not burn," said the spectre again, and he led the way out of the kitchen down some stairs with Jack following. At the bottom of the stairs, they came to a closed door. "Open it," said the dark spectre. "Now, see here," said Jack. "Don't take kindly to being ordered round by the likes of you. If you want that door opened, open it yourself." The dark spectre gave a little moan, but he opened the door and they went into a big room. In the room was a huge dog with sparks coming out of his eyes and flames coming out of his mouth. And the huge dog made a rush at Jack. But Jack sat down. And the dog didn't know what to do. He couldn't really be afraid of a demonic dog if people just sit down next to him. He had a bit of a confusion and just ran off howling, with the sparks flying out of him on every side. Jack watched him and laughed. Then he remembered his pudding and he turned to follow the dog up the stairs, but the dark spectre crossed the room to another door, which it had a great bar across it, and he was calling on Jack to unbar the door and open it. "Why should I?" said Jack. "If you opened one door, you can open another. I must go back to the kitchen. It's not as I stand here. That great lump of a dog may be gobbling up my pudding, or his sparks are setting fire to it. That dog can't gobble it up, well, the blast, but he can't even reach it. Besides, it'll be much too hot. Oh, do open the door." "No, I won't open it. That's flat," said Jack. Then the dark spectre unbarred the door himself. And Jack, after thinking this way and, well, you know, that way for a moment, decided the dark spectre was right about the safety of the pudding. So he followed the spectre into another big room. This room was full of snakes, writhing and hissing and darting out their forked tongues. The dark spectre picked up a whip that was lying on the floor. He handed the whip to Jack and said, "Chase the creatures out." "Not I," said Jack. "They'll only go upstairs and eat my pudding." "They won't. They can't. They don't want to," moaned the dark spectre. "Whoever heard of snakes eating elderberry pudding? Oh, do drive them out." "Oh, well," said Jack. "Perhaps you're right. Perhaps snakes don't eat puddings. So just to oblige you old fellows, there's no sense in it." He whisked the whip this way and that way and whipped it way and that way over the top of the snakes, and the snakes fled from the room, scrambling over each other in their haste to get away. Meanwhile, the dark spectre had crossed the room to yet another door, and he was calling on Jack to open it. No, I'm not coming a step further with you," said Jack. "That dog of yours might not be able to reach my pudding, and the snakes might not want to eat it. I don't know, the water under it hasn't boiled dry. It's probably a burned pudding. Anyway, that dog can jump." It isn't getting burnt and it won't get burnt, wailed the Dark Spectre. Oh, do open this last door and I'll never ask you for anything from me again. Surely you won't refuse an old fellow this last, very last request. Now there were bright tears glittering in the Dark Spectre's eyes, and one big tear was actually trickling down his cheek. And so Jack felt sorry for him and opened the door. He stood back. What a revolting sight. Three huge barrels stood on the floor, and the barrels were full of rats, bats, toads, and some really horrible creatures Jack had never seen before. Creatures that looked like little dragons. And all these creatures were hissing and squealing and shrieking and croaking and generally rubbing up against his ankles. This is your idea of a pretty picture, said Jack. It isn't mine. Just upset the barrels and turn the creatures out, said the Dark Spectre, and it's something I'm asking you to do for yourself, not for me. Oh, well, said Jack, I don't suppose it matters now what I do. My pudding's certainly burnt by this time, so here goes. And he took a run at the barrels, and he turned them topsy-turvy, one after the other. Hissing, squealing, croaking and shrieking, all the creatures tumbled to the floor and rushed out of the room. Those rats rubbing past his ankles. The barrels swayed for a moment this way and that, and then they stood upright again. That's odd, said Jack. It's as if those barrels were alive. They have something in them, said the Dark Spectre, and though it isn't life, it's something that makes life pleasant. Take a look, Jack. Jack looked into the barrels, and oh, how happy he was. The barrels were full to the brim with money. In the first barrel, there were copper coins, in the second, silver coins, and the third, gold coins. Jack, without fear, for that must always henceforth be your name, said the Dark Spectre, all this money is yours, to do with what you will. But take my advice, Jack. Give the copper coins to the poor. Give the silver coins to the church and keep the gold coins for yourself and for your father and your brothers. This castle too, which once was mine, is also yours. No, you needn't thank me. In my life, I was a miserable old miser, Jack. I hoarded all this money, giving alms to none, starving myself that I might add coin to coin. And so when death came, heaven's gates were shut against me and I was doomed to wander miserably amongst my ill-gotten gains. But you have freed me, Jack, without fear, and now I can go to my rest in the world of worlds. Whilst he spoke, the whole time the Dark Spectre was all the time growing paler and paler, and now he was no longer a Dark Spectre, but a White Spectre, and then a White Spectre was just a faint, faint shadow, and now it vanished. Well, I'll be blowed, said Jack, what an old rascal, but if my pudding's burnt, I'll never forgive him. Money or no money. And so saying, he hurried back to the kitchen. And the pudding wasn't burnt. It was just nicely cooked. Jack ate all of it. And then he lay down on the kitchen floor, yawned once, yawned twice, yawned three times, and fell asleep. In the morning, he left the castle and hurried down to the inn. The landlord was overjoyed to see him. I thought you weren't coming back as well, he said. Didn't want another horse to feed. No one's ever come back that goes up to that castle. It isn't cursed any longer, said Jack. And if I can only find my two brothers, all will end happily. And all did end happily. Jack gave the landlord some gold coins to pay for the feeding of those horses that his brothers had left behind, jumped on his horse and galloped home. And at home he found his two brothers, who were safe and well but had a sorrowful story to tell. They'd been to the castle, and they'd been so terrified by the Dark Spectre, they'd fled out the back way, which Jack hadn't noticed, so concerned was he about his pudding. They hurried home across the hills, not even daring to go to the inn for their horses. When Jack told them his story, they were amazed. You're a braver fellow than either of us, said his eldest brother. Yes, and a better fellow, said the second brother. And if we have ever mocked at you, Jack, and thought you silly, you must forgive us. Of course, Jack laughed and said there was nothing to forgive. And he said, too, that his father and brothers must now come to live with him in his castle. Which they did. Why wouldn't you? And in that castle they lived happily ever after, seeing nothing, thankfully, of the huge dog with sparks, the snakes, the nasty creatures, the rats. For all of these had vanished from the castle when the Dark Spectre went to his rest in the world of worlds. And that, gentle listener, is the end of our tale. And I hope it pleased you, for it had no other purpose. Well, what did you think of the story? I could not give you a spooky story in October. I loved this one very much. As I mentioned, it's adapted from a story by Ruth Manning Sanders in her book of Spooks and Spectres. She mentions the original story comes from South Tyrol, and I searched to see if I could find the original. My German is, I'm going to say, passable, but I must admit I mostly looked at the translated volumes. I couldn't find it. There's a tale of a boy without fear, but the ones I could find were usually a longer story, and the only thing they have in common with this one is that they get riches from a ghost. The boy, usually called Johnny, has various incidents where it's to his advantage to be without fear, unlike our Jack, who only has this one. They are similar to a cross-European variant of the tale, which is known as ATU-326, the youth who wanted to learn what fear is. And I don't think they're the same as our tale. They also don't have elderberry pudding. Elderberries are a big crop in Austria, and they're famous for elderberry syrup, Hollander syrup, and elderberry compote, usually with added plums and spices, known as hollekoek. So the inclusion of the fruit in our tale does give it a ring of verisimilitude. I'm just not sure if Ruth adapted a tale so much that I can't find its original, or if I just haven't come across the original tale yet. I don't suppose it really matters. It's a good tale, no matter what. I love that Jack is worried about his pudding being spoiled. I imagine in a time where sweet things were hard to come by, a delicious fruity pudding would be a prized thing. I could talk to you about puddings and their history at length, but I'm not going to, as I've already covered that in a previous episode. See, Jack the Giant Killer. There must be something about heroes named Jack and pudding. So we're going to look at elderberries instead, the culinary folklore and folk medicine history of them. The first thing before I continue is to say that all parts of the elder bush or tree are poisonous. The toxins in the berries and flowers can be tempered with heat, but the rest of the plant is dangerous and it should not be used as a medicine, no matter what the ancients might have suggested. There, that's the disclaimer over now. We can have some fun. I have shared with you a brief overview before of the folklore of the elder tree last October, and I think, unlike my pudding history, I will share this with you again before we move on to the berries specifically. The elder has a dual nature, considered both a poor man's medicine chest for the amount of folk remedies that can be derived from its fruit, flowers and bark, a witch deterrent as well as a tree whose form a witch could take. It also supposedly offered protection from lightning because it was considered one of the woods that made up the cross of the crucifixion. It was believed if you cut an elder tree, it would bleed, which many thought of reflection of what was happening to a witch who used it as a disguise. And there are some tales which meet a woman who, after an elder tree is cut, shows a hand with a cut on it. It was also not to be used for firewood, usually because it was considered to invite the devil into your house. And who wants that? Although possibly it was because elder spits and screams as it burns due to the sap in the wood. This makes it all the more strange that the name elder comes from the Saxon word eld, meaning fire. But this is because the pith was easy to remove, leaving hollow stems which could be used to blow air into the centre of a fire to make it burn hotter. This may also have been what led to the belief in Somerset that elder could not be destroyed unless it burned. There are some experts who believe the elder was essentially given bad press in order to discourage use of it, because many of its uses came from its pagan roots. Certainly in Denmark, it's believed to hold the Hildemor, or Elder Mother, a form of dryad, and she would always be asked before giving up any part of her tree, and there are some similar beliefs in Britain. Silence was supposed to be in agreement, which is very convenient, don't you think? Elderberries, on the other hand, were pretty much considered a blessing rather than a curse. But perhaps if you're picking your own, maybe request permission first. It's only polite after all, even if you're the one that planted the bush. They were more of a blessing for their medicinal value, though. There's less of the mystical about them. There was even a book written about the elder in 1644 called The Anatomy of the Elder by Dr. Martin Blockwich, where the first recorded use of elderberry as a treatment was recorded. This was in the form of a rob, where the juice was heated until it thickened into a syrup, very much like pomegranate molasses still is today. This was used to treat coughs and colds, and actually recent studies have shown some results which may indicate that consumption of elderberry extracts can reduce the length and severity of influenza. More studies with larger groups of subjects will be needed, though, to see if these results can be replicated. The extract was also used to induce sweating in the patient and as a disinfectant in time of plague. There were other ways of using the berry. If made into wine, it could be used to treat catarrh and arthritis, and an oil extracted from the kernels was used to treat skin conditions taken externally and as an emetic when taken internally. May I take this opportunity to remind you how poisonous the elder is. It was used as an addition to other herbs and berries as medicines for feverish infections, bladder stones and sleeplessness, amongst others. You can even buy this book to find more remedies, but you can also find it free to read online at a number of university libraries, just in case you've got other things to spend your money on.
Other herbals mentioned it in passing too, even if, like Culpeper, it's more about the berry's hair dye properties. What about its culinary uses, you cry? Well, maybe ask gently. Well, it does have lots, including the above-mentioned fruit compote and syrups for drinks. In the UK, though, it does seem to have been used a lot to make wine. The Housekeeper's Pocketbook of 1739 has three recipes, one very simple, one more complex, which is spiced with cloves and cinnamon, and one which is combined with raisins to make a rich, sweet wine. Elizabeth Raffles, in The Experienced English Housekeeper, from 1783, also has a recipe for the rob, although it appears in much more of a culinary context than the medical one above. I have to say, if I had a horrible cold, I might perhaps prefer a hot, sweet, spiced elderberry wine or cordial than a lemsip. I have no idea of my own to share, recipe of my own to share, as I've never had any elderberries, although I've been lucky enough to try both a cordial and a liqueur at a farmer's market, and I've regretted not buying cases of the stuff. This recipe, and link is which is in my show notes, does seem like it would work through. And if you have access to them and are prepared to remove all the stems, freeze back bunches for a couple of hours and then separate out the berries with a fork, have at it. I hope you've enjoyed our very seasonal episode. We had spooky stories, we had elderberry and a ghost, as well as a pudding. And as I said in my introduction, I hope you forgive the shortness of this episode because I'll be following up on the Friday before Halloween, which is Friday the 28th, with a collection of scary stories for you. And with that, we come to the end of this episode of Folklore, Food and Fairy Tales.